submit written testimony. The committee will have it distributed to it, and we will move forward. One housekeeping, if you have a cell phone, please turn it off. Not just into the silent mode or the vibrate mode, but off, because it sometimes will interfere with our intercom system, and those who are trying to follow us on the web may get more static than we want them to. With that said, I'm going to open up a public hearing. It's House Bill 2871, and Speaker Merkley, I'm going to have you give us an overview, and Angela Martin, if you'll please come up now. And what I need you all to do is try to limit your opening comments to no more than 8 to 10 minutes. And if you can do it in less, that's even better, because what I'm going to try to do is get as many people up here to testify that signed up as we can. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Jeff Merkley and House Speaker. And it's a delight to come and speak to you and members of the committee about this important bill. This is a very important bill because we have a significant challenge for thousands of Oregonians that this bill addresses, and that is the issue of triple-digit interest rates. When we eliminated our interest rate ceiling in 1981, we assumed the conversation was that competition would keep rates within reasonable levels. That assumption, that belief, has proven wrong in a way more dramatic than anyone could ever have envisioned. We now have well over 800,000 loans a year in the short-term market, and those loans often go 300 to 500% interest. And for many folks, this may be an occasional way to resolve a short-term need for cash. But for a significant percentage, it is the doorway into a cycle of debt from which they cannot escape. And they can find themselves, after several years, starting with a loan of a few hundred dollars, having paid thousands of dollars in interest, and find themselves with thousands more yet to pay. And during those years, it becomes something that completely devastates their financial life, sometimes leading to the stresses of divorce, sometimes leading to lost opportunity costs for the family, investments they might otherwise have made in their children. And this is simply something that civilizations have learned throughout the centuries. They have experimented without interest rate caps, found that high interest devastates individuals, devastates families, and devastates communities. The bill you have before you is one of a group of bills that was sent to you, and I'll comment very briefly in framing it. And that is, other bills have addressed loans of less than 60 days. But everywhere in the country where legislatures have attempted to address loans of less than 60 days, those lenders have immediately moved into the market of more than 60 days or found other ways around the barriers. The only thing that has been effective in terms of restoring something close to reasonable interest rates has been an overall interest rate cap. 34 states have that cap. This means, if we think about the number of short-term loans affected, you can envision that in your Senate districts, as many as 20 to 25,000 people would be affected by the difference between a high interest loan and what is still a quite substantial loan at 36%, but obviously much less likely to suck someone into a financial vortex from which they cannot escape. So this bill completes the package. It restores the sanity that we had in our state until 1981 and encourage the committee to give it every due consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to ask the committee if you have questions of the Speaker, knowing that he may need to leave the room to take off. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Martin, another warning, a couple of 3 minutes at best, and I want to try to get the other opposing panel, and then we'll start moving into public testimony.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being
Chair
here.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, I'm happy to keep my testimony brief this morning. For the record, my name is Angela Martin. I'm here representing Our Oregon and the Economic Fairness Coalition. The coalition includes many of Oregon's leading social service nonprofits, consumer advocates, faith-based organizations, and workers' unions. This summer, the Petty Loan Reform Act, which lawmakers passed over a year ago, will go into effect. As you know, this law was intended to bring an end to triple-digit interest rates that are a defining feature of the payday and car title loan industry. Passage of that bill was an important step toward protecting Oregon citizens from the abusive lending practices in the small loan market. However, we now know that this law alone will not end predatory lending in this state. The high number of payday lenders seeking licenses to make conventional consumer finance loans, as well as the history of payday and car title lenders regularly evading laws in other states around the country, demonstrate that an interest rate cap for all consumer finance licensees is a critical component of any effective reform measures. Behind me this morning, you'll be hearing testimony from a gentleman from North Carolina who's going to speak to the experience of advocates in other states and the experience of other states not only working to block and end the process of triple-digit loans, but also the experience of consumers in those states and the fact that they continue to have access to consumer credit. The difference is they have access to that credit at a rate that is fair and affordable. Within the last 12 weeks in Oregon, five of the major payday lenders signaled their intention to evade the provisions of the Payday Loan Reform Act by applying for a conventional lending license. Again, in Oregon, we know that non-depository consumer lenders must obtain either a short-term license or a conventional lending license. And current law does not cap the interest rate conventional lenders may charge. As a result, without House Bill 2871, the 113 storefronts operated by the five major payday lenders that have submitted applications to become licensed conventional lenders will legally be allowed to continue offering loans at 500% interest, again, unless we pass House Bill 2871. Those five lenders paid a total of $58,000 to switch licenses. That fee was a small drop in the bucket compared to the $51 million Oregon consumers paid in predatory fees in 2005. Again, payday and car title lenders have a long history of evading state laws whenever possible. The only states that have effectively ended small loan debt trap are those that enforce the interest rate limit for our small loan providers and prevent payday and car title lenders from relicensing themselves, making small alterations to their product, and continuing to make abusive loans. I end by urging you again to pass House Bill 2871 and guarantee that all consumers continue to have access to fair and affordable lending products. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Ms. Martin, thank you very much. The next panel I'm going to have up will be Paul Cosgrove, Phil Hoyt, and Jim Gardner. And they might be right outside the door. You want to go ahead and just let them know.
I did notice that there this morning. I'm going to leave it for you. Okay, that's interesting.
You can only have about 8 minutes for your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Paul Cosgrove representing Oregon Financial Services Association. And with me is Phil Holt from one of our members, Continental Loan. We are the trade association of the traditional consumer finance companies, not including any payday or title lenders, and we're here to talk about how this bill affects that aspect of the industry. We're passing out some testimony, and I'm going to very briefly highlight it because I know you'll be able to read it at a later date. But Oregon's traditional consumer finance companies include basically two types of companies. They're those companies who are subsidiaries of national banks. City Financial, sitting over here a couple blocks away from the Capitol, is one example. Wells Fargo Financial is another. And there are several others. And then there are a series of Oregon and other privately owned non-bank affiliated companies. Continental Loan, Mr. Phil Holt, is the representative of one of those companies. The reason that we have opposed HB 2871 is because of its effect not on the payday lenders, not on the title lenders, but on traditional consumer finance companies who've been operating here for years without any concern or problem, providing the kind of credit that people need. Small loans, especially small installment loans without security, do cost more to process and make than a larger loan. And especially if you underwrite those loans by looking carefully at the person's ability to pay, their income expenses, their assets and liabilities, that's a relatively expensive process. And the distinction between a traditional consumer finance company and payday and title lenders is, in fact, that evaluation of a person's ability to pay to make sure that the loan is affordable, is payable, can be paid back within the person's budget, and is reasonable in terms of their other expenses. I would like to highlight just two things that have recently happened that highlight our concern about this bill. And attachments to my testimony, this piece of paper, have pieces about those. One is the piece of paper that has AFSA, our National Trade Association, on the top of it, the second page of my handout, is a summary of a U.S. Supreme Court case that came down in April that highlighted a concern that we always had, which is this bill treats traditional consumer finance companies differently depending on whether they're affiliated with a national bank. The Wachovia case, which is summarized there, made it very clear that an affiliate or subsidiary of a national bank that is subjected to oversight by the Office of Comptroller of Currency is not required to comply with state regulatory licensing and interest rate caps. So that's the Wachovia case. The second issue that I wanted to highlight is, because there's been discussion in the body about this, is the Department of Defense regulations. A number of months ago, Congress passed a bill and authorized the Department of Defense to establish a 36% rate cap on lenders in order to protect our servicemen and women and their families. The Department of Defense has now issued those regulations, which go into effect in the fall. We're in the public comment period. And I wanted to highlight that the Department of Defense, after looking at that authority that Congress granted them very carefully, decided, and we think correctly decided, to distinguish between payday and title lenders and traditional consumer finance companies. And I'd like to just quote from the third page of my handout, a part of the Department of Defense regulations. DOD states that it learned of potential unintended consequences if the 36% rate cap were applied to loans other than payday loans, title loans, and refund anticipation loans. Department of Defense also stated that its regulations were intended to place restrictions on, quote, credit practices evaluated as negative without impeding the availability of credit that is benign or beneficial to service members and their families. If you adopt 2871, you will be doing just that, we believe, placing restrictions on those kinds of credit that is available, that is benign or beneficial, not only to service members and their families, but to others in Oregon. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Holt, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
You may.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Philip Holt. I'm with Continental Loans. And I'd like to just bring you a little perspective about our company, if I may, sir. We do provide traditional installment loans where a consumer will come in, ask that they would borrow X amount of dollars, and we will then take a look at the individual's credit report, their work history, their ability to pay, and we do not take any collateral. That is what separates us from the other individuals that are being scrutinized under this certain act. I believe that traditional installment loans are something that have been highlighted by many consumer advocate groups as a good alternative to payday loans. If you'll look at to your attachments, something that's put out by the Center for Responsible Lending, I think is one of the more noted consumer advocacy groups out of North Carolina. On one of their pages on their internet, they have alternatives to payday loans are responsible small loans, which we are that company. We look at the consumer's ability to repay. We report to the credit bureaus to help get them out of the subprime market. Our company specifically have a five-day right of rescission. So if you come in, Mr. Chairman, and take out a $600 loan and you go back to your Senate office and decide, well, I'm not sure about that, and you had another senator say, hey, you know, we can do that same thing for you at no cost. Bring the money back. We'll refund it, tear up everything at no cost to you. So that's something that's very, very beneficial to the consumer. And also we're building their credit back up by reporting their good pay history to our company. to the three major credit bureaus. So I think if you look at that in the traditional installment loan companies that have been around forever and ever, this is what we're looking at, is a good alternative to other methods out there, seeing that we do not have collateral and that we work with the consumer on their ability to repay with the budget process, and we continuously try to help them get out of the subprime market.
Thank you. Mr. Gardner?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner. I'm appearing today for Cottonwood Financial. I'm going to talk briefly to you about the A11 amendments, if I may, because I think it illustrates some of the challenges this bill presents. In simple terms, these amendments would create a level playing field for banks, credit unions, and consumer finance loan companies offering comparable small loans. Now, why is that a good idea? First, because it is unfair to selectively disadvantage any category of lender while shielding other categories of lenders from comparable regulatory oversight. Second, it's in the interests of consumers to maximize competition among various categories of lenders. In the words of a popular television commercial, when banks compete, you win. Rather than effectively excluding some categories of lenders from a particular credit submarket. And if you turn to page 2 of my written testimony, you'll see what I mean when I talk about competitive products. These are short-term loans offered by a credit union and two banks at interest rates that dramatically exceed the 36% APR that's in this bill. Those practices could continue without abatement if this bill is adopted. And that creates a kind of dynamic in the market which you need to think very carefully about. Because what is those rates right now exist in a competitive market where competition is available from traditional consumer finance companies and others. If that competition is in effect foreclosed because the rate is too low for them to effectively compete in that, whatever competitive pressure, downward pressure now exists on banks and credit unions will vanish. And the basic principles of economics tell us that those rates are likely to go up, which would be a perverse, unintended consequence of this law. The third reason that I wish you to consider seriously the amendment is that this will reduce the risk, which is spelled out at some length in my memorandum, that 2871 would be held unconstitutional under Article 4, Section 23 of the Oregon Constitution, which prohibits, quote, special laws in relation to interest on money. That provision, in my view, comes into play when you selectively regulate one category of comparable loans and not another. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, a couple other house rules, excuse me, that I didn't go over. One, we have a courtesy of a 100-mile rule. That's why these gentlemen came up first. I'm going to call the next panel, and I'm going to be asking where you're from, so we make sure you make that 100-mile rule or greater. Pam Sessions, Peggy Hopkins, and Marion
McLeod.
And you're from where? Please come up. Bingo, as I would say. And the other thing I'm going to be asking everyone, if you have written testimony, please don't read your testimony into the record. We'll have your testimony. We want to hear from you, so if you can summarize, that would be great. If whoever wants to start, give us your name, and then please go forward.
My name is Peggy Hopkins, and I am from QuickCheck Financial. I have a few concerns about this bill. Number one is a 50-year-old woman having to go out into the workforce again, planning to retire with this company, and finding a full-time job that affords me health insurance is not a pleasant aspect. My biggest concern is that I believe we live in a state that affords people wonderful freedoms, the freedom to choose for a woman, the freedom to die with dignity. But I have a concern about the fact that my customers may not have the freedom to get money any way they would choose. I've talked to my customers. They're very pleased with the service. They are not unhappy. And I believe from the bottom of my heart that we provide a very important service. With over 700,000 loans a year, very few complaints, I just am very confused as to the aspect of why. And that's all I have to say.
All right, thank you very much.
I'm Pam Sessions, and I also am with Quick Check Financial. My concern is that, you know, if this bill passes, it's ultimately a 72% reduction in fees, which is going to make it impossible for our company to continue to operate. I come from both sides. I have a family of seven and a disabled husband that I support, and I have worked very hard to move off of state assistance over the years and get my credit in order. I tend to think that it's unfair that the state would step in and make a decision like this when there are people like me who used those loans for what they were meant for. And then there are other people who don't exercise the self-control or the proper financial choices. And because of that, the state wants to change it for everyone. And again, it's going to affect my employment and possibly put me back where I was before. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. So I'm not sure. Marianne stepped away. We'll see if she needs to come back. The other person I had from 100 miles or further checked on here is Jonas Monist. Jonas, where are you from, sir?
I'm from North Carolina, so if I need to take a turn.
I think we'll let you come on up. I think that beats the 100-mile rule. Even for us farmer Texans.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking the time to consider this important bill. I'm Jonas Monist. I work with the Center for Responsible Lending. We're a nonpartisan nonprofit that focuses on abuses in the financial lending industry. Few quick points. I do want to reiterate that we work across the country on issues that, like the ones you're considering today. In states that have attempted to address predatory lending in the small loan markets, but do not close potential loopholes like enforcing an interest rate cap for all lenders in the all state licensed lenders in the small loan market, predatory lending continues. In Illinois, the legislature adopted a bill that would regulate payday lending, and they define a payday loan at 121 days or less. Payday lenders there now offer installment loans at 121 days or more, and the interest rate remains above 300%. In Pennsylvania, payday lenders now offer open-end credit because open-end credit is not regulated in the same way that closed-end credit is. The interest rate there, the APR, would be 300-350%. Texas, the same sort of thing. Virginia and Kansas, the same issues. I won't go into the details here. We do believe that responsible small loans are the answer. But we also believe that a reasonable interest rate cap is part of a responsible small loan. Consumer finance industries thrive in states that have interest rate caps. A majority of states right now have interest rate caps. A majority of those states choose 36% as the interest rate cap for state-licensed small loan lenders. In North Carolina, as the payday lenders were leaving our state over, it took a few years because of various methods of subterfuge that they were using to try to subvert our small loan laws. It took a few years to get them all the way out of the state. At the same time that payday lenders were leaving, the volume of consumer finance loans was increasing drastically. Over a three-year period, it more than doubled the consumer finance loans of $600 or less. I guess one last point that I'll leave you with. In North Carolina, where all state licensed small loan lenders are regulated at the 36% interest rate cap, you have the companies such as City Financial that are owned by national banks. They don't operate as subsidiaries. They are owned by the national bank. Operate under the 36% interest rate cap, as do our state-based companies. It's a little bit technical, but there are lenders that are owned by national banks that operate under their federal charters and are therefore subject to the federal regulator coming in and paying attention to how they do business. And then there are also these national banks can own a company like City Financial, but not have City Financial operate under the federal charter. there's no reason to believe that the lenders that are owned by the national banks are going to change anything about their business practices. There's no reason to think that they will do anything other than continue to be regulated under Oregon's laws, even if you adopt 2871, because, as I say, they operate across the country, and in the majority of states where they operate, they're subject to a 36% interest rate cap. I have testimony that I'll leave here with you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions either now or in the future. Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So your testimony, you appear to be somewhat of an expert on this nationwide. Your testimony is that a hard interest rate cap, such as is in this bill, that when we if we pass such a law, that there will still be available small short-term loans to consumers that need them?
In every state that we have seen, yes. That as I said, a majority of states already have interest rate caps on the books. And the numbers vary, but the majority of those use 36% interest rate cap, and consumer finance companies thrive in those states.
We are being, Mr. Chair, follow up. We are being told that such loans simply will not be available under a 36% cap. That companies, that payday loan companies and so on, will leave the state, and that other financial institutions will not make available unsecured loans for, you know, short-term loans of this type. And you're saying that's not necessarily true?
It's not true in other states, no. Now, it may require tweaks to the business model, the way that they offer the products and the terms of the products that they offer, but small loans, credit for small dollar amounts, is still available in states that enforce these caps.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Thank you very much, and thanks for traveling to make this appearance.
My pleasure.
In those states where payday lenders have left the state, do you have any information that tells us what happened to the workforce?
To the
workforce.
The workforce. Mm-hmm. I don't have any specific data on that. We have not noticed any increase in the unemployment numbers in North Carolina as the payday lenders were leaving. And, you know, if you look at the numbers for the consumer finance companies that are drastically increasing their volume as the payday lenders were leaving, we assume that that workforce would be absorbed by the increase in loans offered by other types of companies.
Thank you very much. I have two other people that appear to have traveled over 100 miles. Art Aiken, I believe, says Central Oregon. I assume from Ben or Jefferson.
Yeah.
And then is it Asha Anderson? Okay, and you're from?
Atlanta.
Please come up. I think that's another one of those over 100 miles.
Yeah, Atlanta almost makes it.
Come on up. Go and get started.
I'll be real brief. I represent Allied Cash Advance. We have 12 offices in the state of Oregon. And our biggest concern is we're one of the companies that are trying to convert into a consumer loan product from the short-term loan product. But what our biggest concern is if this bill is passed, sure, the gentleman that just spoke said that there would be products available for the customers in the state of Oregon, but credit is driven by credit scores these days, and where are those people going to go? Ultimately, if the bill passes, and already our industry has seen that many of the payday lenders have closed up shop here in the state of Oregon, and their customers have no place to go. Their bills are due in full. They either get set up on a payment plan or they're financially devastated. We're concerned that even with this interest rate cap, 3/4 of the customers aren't going to qualify for another consumer loan because of their credit scores. And our other concern is, yes, there's 3,000 plus employees out of work in the state of Oregon if the payday loans company shut down. And I'm one of them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Przanski and members of the committee, I will be as brief as possible. Thank you so much for your time. I'm Corporate Counsel and Director of Government Affairs for Northwest Title Loans, and I'm here today to oppose House Bill 2871, and I also hope that you'll keep my testimony in mind as you consider 2204 later.
For the record, I need you to put your name on the record.
Aja Anderson.
Great, thank you.
O-S-J-H-A, if that makes any sense at all. I'm just going to make, you've heard everything. This debate's been going for quite some time in Oregon. You've heard the same messages over and over and over again. But and these have been made, too. I just feel like it's worth reiterating, and hopefully I can convince the committee and everyone here of this, that 36%, it won't work. We will be gone. We're not crying wolf. It will shut this industry down. And potentially, I'm not sure how many employees are working in this industry, but I would guess a couple thousand or more. I have no idea. But it will shut them down. They will lose their jobs, and they will lose their health benefits as well as their families. If you don't want to take my word for the 36%, I would ask you to contact the Florida State Department of Financial Institutions and the Tennessee Department of Financial Institutions. In Florida, they passed a Title Loan Act back in 2000. The reason they did was because there was no state oversight at the time. It was a county license. They needed to pass something. Unfortunately, they also passed a 30% APR cap. There were hundreds of title lenders in Florida. You can go to the website right now, and it will say there are none. There are no licensed title lenders in Florida anymore. Tennessee just issued a report in February, and their department found that the break-even point, if you do just title loans in Tennessee, is 18.4% per month. 18.4% per month, not APR. That's the break-even point that the department found. That wasn't a lender claiming that that was their profit margin. That was what the department found. And also, if you look across the country, you just won't find anywhere this kind of product being offered at 36%. It's just economically impossible. When your average loan is, you know, $300 or $400 and $3 per 100, you just simply cannot keep the lights on. You cannot pay your employees the rate, the salary they deserve, and you can't provide benefits or pay your overhead. It just economically will not work. Also, if someone could do it for less, I think they would. I mean, we live in a very competitive market here, and if it could be offered and there was any sort of profit to be made for less than what it's being offered, I think that would happen. But the bottom line is 36%. It's never going to work economically. So my next point is that this is really not a tightening of regulations bill. It's a prohibition bill, and I just think prohibit it. No more title loans and paydays would be a little more direct, so that, you know, I watched this, you know, from Atlanta through the media and through your hearings, and it's not a tightening of regulations. It is a prohibition of this industry. And, you know, it's important for that message to get out so that people here really understand what's going on. Because it's easy to sell, you know, we want to offer you a lower rate. I mean, if someone said, you know, I want to lower your gas prices, I'd go, yeah, that sounds great. But if it meant I wouldn't be able to get any more gas, I'd say, well, I'll pay my $3 a gallon. So I think it's important to get that point across, that this is actually a prohibition bill. And if that's the case and you want us gone, then pass a prohibition bill. But before you do that, think about the consequences. You know, just for my personal knowledge, we sent out customer surveys so that I could truly understand who our customer is and why they need these loans. And we got back overwhelmingly positive responses and personal notes saying, thank you so much. I would have lost my home if you had not been there to help me. Or you saved my credit score so I don't deal with this for years and years and years by a ruined credit score because of a mispayment or a default. Or you repaired my car, so you helped me repair my car so I can continue going to work so I don't lose my job. It's more than $300 to these people. They need this money for important things that save them a lot of trouble in the long run. And so I hope you think about the thousands and thousands of people that will not have anywhere else to turn. They may have no credit history. They may have some sort of flaw on their credit that's going to prevent them from getting these loans that they're claiming that they're going to be offered. They won't be able to access them. And I'm not sure what's going to happen. This bill can pass, and their problems are not going to go away. Title loans and payday loans may disappear, but their need for credit and financial help will still be there. And so, you know, I admire...
Anderson, I need you to...
I'm wrapping up right now.
Okay.
I admire the effort here, and I think that the passion and energy in passing this legislation could really be very effective in financial literacy programs and finding other alternatives for short-term credit needs. And I hope that you oppose these bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next panel is going to be, I believe it's Brian Schwartz, and then Robin Stevenson and Rick Bennett. No one's rushing up here. That must be. If you're ready.
Yes. My name is Brian Swartz, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Oregon Center for Christian Values, and come from Sandy, Oregon. And so thank you, Senator Przanski, and the rest of the committee. I will briefly just share our testimony, which is basically based, you've heard a lot of expert testimony and a lot of talking about the financial aspects of this bill, but at the Oregon Center for Christian Values, one of our main concerns is trying to represent sort of the ethical and the moral dimensions of this decision and the way that a lot of these businesses are established. One of the most fundamental tenets of Christian faith is taking care of those that are in need in our community. And in many ways, we've found that these businesses are fundamentally geared and structured in a way that's the opposite of that. They are designed to often prey on those in need, people who are living from paycheck to paycheck, who take out these loans. We found out that 9 out of 10 borrowers take out these loans for 5 or more payday loans a year. And often, I think it's about 70%, end up taking 12 to 13 a year, which means that they're taking them out every month. And this is not a solution to economic disadvantage. This is a kind of a way of continuing it. It's a way of getting people trapped in debt. We found that it's really just going and often draining money from low-income families and communities rather than really going and providing them a long-term solution to their problems. And I think that one of the things you have to really think about when we're talking about, you know, legislation and we're talking about what's good for the state as a whole and the citizens that live here is really looking at the most vulnerable.
Mr. Swartz, I need you to summarize and finish up.
Sure. And so essentially we're just saying that we want to call and remind you of that sort of obligation to really take care of the most vulnerable in the state and to look at the hundreds and thousands, or literally thousands of people who are affected by this bill and who are living on the edge, and to support this as a way to keep them from falling into a debt trap.
All right. Thank you. Robin?
Yes, my name is Robin Stevenson from Portland, Oregon. I'm here as a constituent and taxpayer. And basically what I'm here to talk about is that I want to make sure that my congresspeople pay attention to how this affects Oregon and our money. You guys are the stewards of our taxpayer money. And I think that the payday loan companies are bad business for Oregon. I think we can do better than this. You've heard testimony today that what are the people who are poor going to do? Well, following bad money, which is what I think that the payday lenders are bringing to Oregon with good money, doesn't make sense to me, because what I think happens is that people who take these payday loans, we see them through our food banks. Our food banks have an increased need based on people spiraling into poverty, into deeper debt. That doesn't make sense for Oregon. You guys have just passed the rainy day bill, so you understand that more Oregons that are working, the more Oregons that are doing better, it's better for Oregon. And when people are falling deeper into debt, I don't see how that helps our state. I won't read my testimony, but I argue against some of the testimonies that are given here today. And I just think that I've been doing a lot of calling with our Oregon lately, and everyone says to me, this is a no-brainer. How could they even be talking about this? Your constituents. I'm calling all over the state. They're like, what, 500%? This is crazy. How could they even be talking about that? So I want you to think about your constituents who voted you in to take care of our taxpayer monies, which go to help these social services later. So be stewards of that money, and let's put the money back in our state and not in the deep pockets of payday lenders. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. We're very fortunate to have over 500,000 members here across the state. And in anticipation of this legislative session, we did a survey of our members, a random sampling, covering several issues that we anticipated would be considered, including a 36% interest cap on consumer-type loans similar to car title, payday, and other loans of less than $50,000. The results of that survey indicated that 76%, or nearly 8 in 10 of our members, support such a cap. I did not have time to make copies of the material for you this morning, but I will provide them to your administrator either tomorrow or on Wednesday. And again, AARP supports passage of House Bill 2871. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks all. Next panel is going to be Michael Rosenberg, Greg Chamoff, and I believe it's Sandra Groove. Great. Mr. Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chairman Pozanski, for the opportunity to appear here. Thank you, members of the panel. The committee. I'm a little bit nervous. I've never appeared in public in such a forum, and I'm humbled by it, and grateful for the opportunity to participate in the democratic process. My name is Michael Rosenberg, and I founded Cashco Financial Services on a shoestring, on a very very short shoestring, about 18 years ago. Believe me, I don't have deep pockets. House Bill 2203, 2204, and 2205 address payday and title lenders. We are not payday or title lenders. Those bills express the legislature's desire to curb the activities of those lenders, and in no way did they affect us or operations. We were left untouched. House Bill 2871, on the other hand, was introduced to further clamp down, as we've heard this morning, further clamp down payday and title loans and close loopholes. But the introduction of the 36% cap on all loans under $50,000, including the small loan category, as an expression of APR, which is significant because the APR takes into consideration all fees, that is the reason why we're here today. We're here to raise this issue because it occurs to me that at no time during the discussions, no time during the committee meetings or the House debate, was the subject of small installment loans raised or taken into consideration, or that market considered, or the impact that this legislation would have on the borrowers who have been borrowing from us quietly, and we've been making these loans responsibly to them with great dedication for 18 years, as I said. We think those loans need to be preserved, and we believe that the other states that have this kind of cap do have an accommodation for small loans, recognizing that they cannot function under the same conditions as larger size loans that go for longer periods of time. When a stranger comes into one of our offices and asks to borrow money, we don't make that decision based solely on an impersonal credit report. And we don't base that decision on the size of the paycheck. And we don't base that decision on value of the collateral. We look at the whole picture, and our employees are trained to look at a whole range of factors and take them into consideration before they make a credit decision. We look for the story behind the story, and we teach them not to be judgmental. We teach them to be open-minded and look for the positive. And we feel that the extension of credit is an expression of faith in our customers and a vote of confidence in them that they're going to do the right thing.
Mr. Rosenberg, I need you to go ahead and finish up. We've been over 2 minutes.
I will ask the panel to do the same thing. Look at the story behind the story. I know you'll do the right thing. We have people who have come today at great effort to express their gratitude and confidence in us. I hope you'll hear their story and read their written testimony as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sandra Grivey, and I'm currently a customer of Cashco Financial Services in Portland. And I'm here to testify against the bill 2871 that would limit the lending policies and procedures now being used by Cashco. to limit the resources of people that cannot attain traditional loans from banks, credit unions, and etc. is proving that the rich is getting richer and the poor are just getting by. Limiting Cashco's ability to loan needed money or limit its ability to help the common individual is showing an all-time low on the government's part. Please do not make a decision based on the moral opinion of those who, quite frankly, don't have a third of the financial worries of the common person. Cashco helped me when I really needed the extra because of an emergency or something that came up unexpectedly. They helped me with payments and an interest rate that I could live with and I could make. And I rely on them, and I don't feel anyone has the right to limit my resources that are available to me. And by passing the bill 2871, that would do just that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chamoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Greg Chamoff from the law firm Davis Wright Tremaine, appearing before you today on behalf of a cluster of small traditional consumer finance lenders, including Sun Credit, Your Credit, Crane Financial. With the exception of one that happens to be in Senator Monroe's district, most of these are scattered throughout the state in smaller communities from Hillsborough to Klamath Falls. 6 weeks ago, a cap on interest rates might have achieved the purpose that the proponents wanted. Since the United States Supreme Court has prevented you from regulating national banks, you will no longer have a level playing field, and the evidence that Mr. Gardner gave you of national banks, national organizations charging the interest rates that you don't want to see will continue, and the companies like those that I represent will go out of business. What is doubly ironic about this is that as the national banks from out of state came into Oregon and gobbled up local banks, closed branches, and put people out of work, where those people went to go to work was in traditional consumer finance installment lending offices, some of which they founded out of their own pocket. A second problem that you are dealing with is the view that the package of DCBS bills that's before you, House Bills 2202 through 2205, will not stop payday and title lenders. They will. Payday and title lenders have come to me, said, you're supposed to know the law of Oregon better than anybody else. It was your job to help members close loopholes in bills. Find me a loophole. And I have told the payday and I have told the title lenders there are no loopholes. The folks from DCBS are really sharp at what they do. And what's left to payday and title lenders is to become installment lenders if they want. But under the DCBS bills, that means that 90% of the loans that they're going to have to make are going to be 6 months or more. That should, if DCBS is right, and they've had all the other states' models to work from, close out to a great degree, if not entirely, the cycle of debt. What no one seems to be talking about is that there is a particularly large hammer hanging out there over the heads of people who might try to skirt the DCBS bills, and that's Oregon's racketeering law. A person who helps somebody make a loan that isn't legal has committed racketeering, and that penalty is forfeiture and jail. And that should be enough to keep anybody from trying to avoid the law's limits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chamoff. Our next panel is going to be as follows. Let's see where they're at. Lisa Winslick, Noreen Goplin, I guess, and Sybil Hebb.
Could you get this later?
And shorter is better.
Shorter is better. My name is Noreen Goplin. I'm the director of Lutheran Advocacy Ministry of Oregon and lead convener of the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger. I reside in Welch's, Oregon. I wanted to share with you very briefly some of the concerns of our organizations. We know that economic systems often are not value neutral. And what we have seen, and what clergy particularly have seen throughout Oregon, are people coming to them who have had great difficulty as they have been entrapped by the predatory lending practices and business models of payday loan operations in Oregon. We are concerned about that. We also do not feel that this is a unprofitable or a high-risk business, particularly because these organizations require the ability to pay back through either a paycheck, a pay stub, proving their employment, a Social Security check, a disability check, and even a military check. And what we're beginning to see is that those people who have difficulty after 6, 7, and 11 turnovers of that arrangement, that now the industry is going to garnish payments. And I really encourage you to check with the counties in terms of the level of garnish payments that are happening throughout the state. Because of the number of people who have come to our churches and tried to get help because of the entrapment and the extraordinary dollars that they now own on very small original notes, I have to tell you that Lisa and I have just come off the Lutheran Assembly, where the main job was to pick a new bishop, which we did. We're very excited about that. But that assembly took the time to take out of its agenda a period of time to take a look at this bill. And Lisa has some of the responses from that. And Lisa, would you?
Okay. I'm Lisa Wenslick from Portland, and I am a member of St. Luke's Lutheran Church. I have happy to say that out of 390 delegates, we have cards from 240 delegates. So that's, I think, a very high return rate during a very busy day. These cards come from all corners of the state, from Ontario to Tillamook to Klamath Falls, from Bend, and obviously the Willamette Valley. Lutherans represent all political spectrums. I think all parties were well represented in the room. This is not considered a conservative or a progressive issue, but a social justice issue. And I don't know if I'm proud to say this or not, but I don't think that there's any more better word than average Oregonian. I think Lutherans represent that average Oregonian very well.
At least Garrison Keillor tells us that.
Yeah. So I just wanted to read some of the comments. This one from Portland. Please plug the loopholes. I have parishioners trapped in poverty and even homelessness because of the aggressive lending practices that I find sinful.
I'm going to ask you to read one more, then I'm going to cut you off and have Sybil Head be our last speaker. Sorry, but
okay.
We're running out of time.
And this one from Burns. It's high time to put a lid on this corrupt practice. Please vote yes on House Bill 2871.
All right, thank you. And are you going to be submitting those to the record?
Yes.
Or just different people?
We just want to make sure that all that they go to, being average, a lot of them don't quite get their right senator on the card, so we just want to make sure that they all go to the right people.
Sybil?
Chair Pozanski, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm here in strong support of this bill, and I very much appreciate the efforts of the Economic Fairness Coalition, the committee, and the sponsors on this issue. The Oregon Law Center, as you know, has as its mission the promotion of economic and social justice on behalf of low-income, vulnerable Oregonians. And the issue of economic protection, consumer protection, is high on its list of issues to consider in furtherance of this mission. We regularly do surveys of the communities that we serve to seek from them input about what the most important issues are to our clients, and this issue comes up frequently as something that has a negative and vital impact on their day-to-day lives. I want to let you know, as of course you know, that clients often, the instigation for seeking these loans is an emergency of some sort, either a health care crisis, a need for medication, a need to pay the rent, a need to buy food. The clients, low-income clients in these situations have little to no bargaining power, and they are often getting into these negotiations and signing these contracts to pay loan interest rates that send them into this very spiral that was just mentioned. We have clients who have suffered homelessness and other ramifications as a result of getting into this spiral of debt, and so we appreciate the consideration here of a fair attempt to provide balance while allowing the loan product or a short-term loan product to continue to be available, also imposing a cap that is reasonable such that our clients and vulnerable Oregonians will not get into this spiral of debt that pushes people over the edge in a way that has a horrible impact on them and their families and also on our communities throughout Oregon. So I appreciate the committee's attention to this issue and very much urge support. And thank you.
Thank you. And that's going to conclude the public testimony that we can take this morning because we have another committee, as I mentioned, coming at 8:30. Let me make a couple of closing remarks if I could. This bill is scheduled for a work session a week from this Wednesday. That's May 30th. If you have amendments that you want the committee to be considering, they need to be in draft form from LC by Tuesday, the 29th. So I can make certain that they are distributed to the committee so everyone will have them before we actually meet on the 30th. And with that, I want to thank everyone for coming here so early on a Monday morning. I apologize. We don't have any more time to take more live testimony. But if you want to give us testimony, please feel free to do so in writing. It can be by letter. It can be by email, however you choose. And again, thank you very much for being here this morning. We're closed the Senate Commerce Committee for Monday morning. Thanks, everyone, for getting here. Thank you, Brad. I'll see you all this afternoon.
Sure.